This is VOA News. I'm Gene Randall. North Korea has launched what South Korea is calling a barrage of projectiles into the sea off the east coast of the Korean Peninsula. But on Twitter today, U.S. President Donald Trump seemed unimpressed. AP correspondent Ben Thomas has a report.
North Korea's firing of what South Korea describes as several short-range missiles comes as a likely sign of Pyongyang's growing frustration at stalled diplomatic talks with Washington. North Korea is seeking relief from international sanctions in return for nuclear disarmament. But President Trump says he still believes a nuclear deal with North Korea will happen. In a Saturday morning tweet, Trump says he believes North Korean leader Kim Jong-un fully realizes the great economic potential of North Korea and will do nothing to interfere or end it. Trump adds, he also knows that I'm with him and does not want to break his promises to me. Ben Thomas, Washington.
Israel charges that Palestinian militants fired dozens of rockets into southern Israel today, though it says many were intercepted by its air defense systems. There were no reports of Israelis injured by the rocket fire, but officials in Gaza say at least three Palestinians were wounded in Israel's retaliatory airstrikes. On Friday, four Palestinians were killed by Israeli fire, while two Israeli soldiers were wounded in the weekly protest near the Gaza border. Thailand's 66-year-old king Maha Vajiralongkorn has been officially crowned. This was the first day of an elaborate three-day, $30 million coronation celebration, which is being televised. The king will meet the public and foreign dignitaries on Monday, which has been declared a public holiday. A Boeing 737 jetliner skidded off a runway Friday night at the Jacksonville, Florida Naval Air Station while attempting to land with 136 passengers on board. The aircraft ended up in a river. It happened during a heavy thunderstorm. No fatalities and no critical injuries reported. The flight was a military charter from the U.S. base at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. More news at voanews.com. This is VOA News. U.S. officials are said to be considering options and perhaps trying to reconcile opposing views among various Trump administration officials, including President Trump. This as self-declared Venezuelan leader Juan Guaido is calling for new street protests aimed again at forcing Nicolas Maduro from office. Guaido wants his followers to demonstrate outside the country's military bases. Guaido has made repeated calls for the army to help force Maduro out, but the socialist president clings to power. Mr. Trump discussed Venezuela with Russian leader Vladimir Putin by phone on Friday, and to the surprise of many of his own people, came away claiming that Putin has no intention of interfering in Venezuela.
He is not looking at all to get involved in Venezuela other than he'd like to see something positive happen for Venezuela. And I feel the same way.
Meanwhile, the political standoff continues. Michael Shifter is the president of Inter-American Dialogue. He says the outlook in Caracas is anything but clear. And Mr. Trump's view is one diametrically opposed by Secretary of State Mike Pompeo.
After the events of this week, both Guaido and Maduro are weakened. They've been battered. And I think the armed forces that already has enormous power in the government may move towards taking control themselves without Maduro, but not necessarily also embracing Guaido.
On the lighter side, there is a royal baby watch going in Britain, and it is intense. Sarah Bassett has our report.
The Duchess of Sussex is not expected to have the baby at St. Mary's Hospital in London, where her sister-in-law Kate had her children. She is sticking closer to the couple's home near Windsor, where media and well-wishers are continuing to camp out. The royal couple have kept their birth plans and due dates secret, though Meghan said months ago that the baby was due in late April or early May. The baby will be the seventh in line to the British throne and the eighth great-grandchild of Queen Elizabeth II. Sarah Bassett, London.
Japan's new emperor addressed the public for the first time today after his ascent to the throne early this week. Emperor Naruhito, accompanied by his wife Masako and other members of the royal family, greeted cheering crowds from a balcony of the Imperial Palace in Tokyo. He said in part, "I am deeply grateful and I wish from the bottom of my heart for your health and happiness and hope that our country pursues world peace hand in hand with other countries." The 59-year-old Naruhito was installed on Wednesday, one day after his 85-year-old father, Akihito, abdicated, the first Japanese monarch in two centuries to do that. He is now the Emperor Emeritus. For more news, you can always go to voanews.com online. Gene Randall, VOA News.
and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
We are going to continue to promote initiatives of reconciliation even beyond the process of the ongoing national dialogue forum.
Zambian church groups express concern about the ongoing national dialogue.
Police is folding its hands, is not acting on the matter. It's going to be the public to judge and, I mean, to see what they do with the police and what they do with those people that have come in the open to say we did it.
Malawian main opposition party demands the arrest of Home Affairs Minister Nicholas Dawusi.
If it is not for the introduction of the will of the army, I don't think that revolutionaries could have attained the toppling of al-Bashir government.
And representatives of the Sudanese Opposition Popular Congress Party, or PCP, meet the ruling military council. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Prominent Zambian church groups have expressed concern about the ongoing national dialogue between opposition parties, civil society, and the government. They say the dialogue is unlikely to resolve challenges the country faces, including political tension and violence. The groups include the Council of Churches in Zambia, the Zambia Conference of Catholic Bishops, and the Evangelical Fellowship of Zambia. The national dialogue, which was officially opened by President Edgar Lungu, seeks proposals to revise the constitution. For more about their concerns, I reach Father Cleophas Lungu, General Secretary of the Catholic Bishops' Conference.
The concerns were mainly on two fronts. On one hand, it was concerns around the process itself. On the other hand, there were concerns on the particular provisions that are contained in the National Dialogue Forum Act, as it were. With regard to the process, we thought that there wasn't sufficient time given to consult the people on what was going to take place in this forum. We had started the process of consulting the people, and we had even developed a framework for the national dialogue, dialogue that is going to be aimed at reconciling or healing the country, which has been besieged by elements of tension emanating from all the way back to the last general election.
Father Lungu, some people are saying that the national dialogue was open to all and sundry. The religious groups, individuals, political party, opposition groups, civil society groups. So if people fail to go to the national dialogue to present their views about this review of the constitution, the government or the powers that be should not be blamed for such acts. How do you respond to that?
If you look at the representation from the church, as far as we read the act, we are only going to be at most 6 or 10 people against a forum that would be in the range of 300 to 400 people. Now, if it is a balanced representation, one can see from that dynamic. But above all, I think it is important to take into account the fact that even from the opening remarks of His Excellency, the President of the Republic of Zambia, it was very clear that the process was not going to bring in new discussion. So it is clear that there was a set of amendments that were going to be done. And those amendments were not given to the people to study and to consult from their constituencies so that as they participate in the forum, they would be representing the voice of their constituency.
With all these concerns, what's next for these three church mother bodies in order to have these concerns registered and possibly addressed by the government?
Well, we have made our position very clear. We have shared our concerns. It is up to the people who are in charge to listen, and if they don't, well and good. With those who are participating in the National Dialogue Forum, we wish them well. And if they can come up with the good aspects that will improve the governance of the country, well and good. But we believe that even beyond these initiatives, there is a lot more to be done in order to improve the democratic, you know, dispensation in the country, as well as to bring about a process that will lead the country to be more peaceful, more united, and more reconciled as a people.
So, Father Lungu, does that mean that despite the concerns you have, the church groups support this ongoing national dialogue?
Well, we believe that this is a very limited process. If we are to address the major concerns people have in the area of the management of political affairs in the country, but also in the management of the economic aspects of the country, and even going beyond the social as well as cultural issues that are eminent in the country, we believe that there is more to be done, and therefore the church will continue to be a channel of engaging people, bringing people around the table, of genuine dialogue that is transparent and accountable, but also we are going to continue to promote initiatives of reconciliation even beyond the process of the ongoing National Dialogue Forum.
Father Cleophas Lungu is the General Secretary of the Zambian Catholic Bishops Conference. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. Opposition Malawi Congress Party, or MCP, is demanding the immediate arrest and prosecution of Home Affairs Minister Nicholas Dawusi over allegations he played a key role in the alleged rigging of the 2014 general election. The MCP also called on the police to summon Vice President Dr. Saulos Chilima for questioning over his role in the scheme as well. The opposition party's demand came after the Vice President said that the Home Affairs Minister, a prominent member of the ruling Democratic People's Party, was the mastermind behind the fire that torched the warehouse of the Malawi Electoral Commission. For more about their demand, I reach Moses Kunkunyu, the MCP's Director for Elections.
Actually, it's really coming in the wake of the statement that was made by the Vice President of the country, Saulos Chilima, who says he has evidence that Nicholas Dawusi, who is the Minister of Homeland Security now, is behind the torching of the Malawi Electoral Commission warehouse in 2015. He further said it was commissioned by the DPP, which he was part of. So we are calling on the police to move in swiftly and arrest the minister now that we have a suspect, and the name of the suspect is just coming out from any wild kind of allegations. But it's the Vice President of the country who was or might still be part of the DPP that he claims was behind the torching of the warehouse. So we're calling on the police to arrest him, but also to call the Vice President for questioning, because he has made the allegations and he claims he has evidence and more information on the same.
Now, some people are saying that your call is not realistic because, one, Nicholas Dawusi is a prominent member of the ruling party. Some even call him a right-hand man of the president, and that is why he served as information minister as well as the current home affairs minister.
It can never be a misplaced call. The unprofessional conduct that the police may wish to display now does not in any way render our call misplaced. We are calling on the professionalism of the police. In fact, the police don't even need to be told to do their job. They told the nation that they were investigating when the fire took place in 2014. Now they have been investigating. The matter was closed, but there is fresh evidence. Someone is claiming that he knows who did it. And the person that is making the claim is the Vice President, who was part of that DPP that he claims was behind the whole torching. So we are saying, if Saulos Chilima is saying we did it as DPP, and he says our own minister was the man we sent to do the job, why should the police wait for anybody else to call them to act? We're only calling on the police to do their work as they do it professionally. If they do not act, it's not something that should be thrown at us as making claims that may not hold water.
What is next for the MCP? Because opponents are saying it's just a publicity stunt, and that because the MCP is trying to gain momentum because of its sluggish campaign, you are making all these allegations, and that these exposés, supposedly, that the vice president made is just political talk, just to whip up sentiment to gain some momentum for his stuttering political campaign, and that you are just following on a losing bandwagon.
Malawi Congress Party is the only party that is on the ground now doing a campaign that has posed it as the next government. If you ask anyone, they'll tell you Malawi Congress Party is the party that is poised to win the next general election, just like it did in 2014, but was not announced as such. So we are putting everything in place. We have put measures in place that no one is going to rig the elections. If you talk of us wanting to gain some political mileage from some cheap kind of platforms, my answer will be a no. Because we are not in the same party with the vice president. So the vice president cannot make a statement that is going in the end to benefit the opposition, in this case, Malawi Congress Party. If he had kept quiet, we were not going to make any calls, because we made our calls already in 2014 asking the police and Malawi Electoral Commission to do a thorough investigation into the torching of Make Warehouse then. We went quiet thereafter and concentrated on our campaign.
So what is your next line of action if the authorities do not act as you have demanded?
It is not the first time that the police can be called to act on something and they do not. So it's not going to be surprising. The good thing is that this matter is a public matter. It's the police dealing with an issue that is of public concern. Malawians footed the bill for the by-election that was held due to the failure to implement a court order that ordered a recount of the votes. When the votes were burnt in that warehouse, Malawians footed the bill for the rerun. Over 300 million kwacha was spent in that rerun. And there are other associated costs with the damage that took place at the warehouse. So it's a public matter. It's an issue to do with Malawians. And Malawians are going to be the judges. If the police is not delivering, if the police is seen to be shielding some thieves or some criminals, then it's up to Malawians to judge. This time around, someone has mentioned that there is a suspect somewhere. He has put himself in that band to say, we did it as DPP. We did it. We caused the fire. The police is folding its hands. It's not acting on the matter. It's going to be the public to judge and, I mean, to see what they do with the police and what they do with those people that have come in the open to say we did it.
Moses Kunkunyu is the director for elections for the main opposition Malawi Congress Party. He spoke with me from the capital, Lilongwe. Sierra Leonean opposition legislators walked out of Parliament Thursday in protest to what they said is the ongoing abuse of power by President Julius Maada Bio and his administration in Freetown. They say the government has been using state institutions, including the courts, to persecute officials of the former administration in an attempt to make the party unpopular. For reaction, I reached Sierra Leonean Information Minister Mohamed Rahman Soare.
This was a bad day for our democracy, because we believe there are other ways the APC could have manifested their alternative views or if they had any dissent. 2 days earlier, on Tuesday last this week, His Excellency President Bio met with them, all political party leaders in Parliament, to discuss welfare and other issues in a very decorous and convivial atmosphere. So this came as a rude shock, and it took Sierra Leoneans aback. Many have condemned it across political divides.
Lawmakers from the opposition said that was to register their protest over the ruling party or the president's abuse of power.
Well, they have not been able to substantiate this loose-gaseous allegation. In the first place, I told you they had a meeting involving all political party leaders. Again, the state opening was witnessed by other opposition parties, the National Grand Coalition in attendance, the C4C was in attendance, and independent political parties. So this was an exclusively APC move. And to say they have not had other opportunities to express themselves is not true. It's been very, very untruthful. A couple of months ago, His Excellency President Bill held a big bipartisan meeting at State House where political parties expressed their concerns and where the president also used the opportunity to assure them of his commitment to inclusivity and to national cohesion. He even challenged them, right, to work with his government to support him so that we can all deliver on our national commitment as a nation. After that meeting, I mean, the APC issued a position that they were not ready to work with government, right? But that's beside the point. We have always provided an opportunity for alternative views where we can disagree and agree in the best interest of our country.
Well, they have also said in certain spaces, and one of the placards read that the government should stop bastardizing the Sierra Leonean constitution.
Well, there is no evidence that any constitution has been so bastardized at any time. I have heard in some quarters people saying the election of a speaker. During the speakership elections, I was in parliament. I emerged very clearly that all that happened was when the clerk of parliament called the names of MPs who were being injuncted to leave the well of parliament. That was what happened. They could not have participated in the vote. And this is not the very first time people who have been injunctioned have stayed out of parliament. They have not taken the oath of office. So, I mean, there is no abuse of power here. Everything President Biden has done scrupulously fits very well with the national constitution. He is one of those guys who is very committed to upholding every tenet of the constitution as sworn.
12 opposition members in parliament have been petitioned in court for what was described as the violation of electoral rules. But they are also demanding that the electoral commissioner, Ifeanyi Ali Ekwueteh, should be removed due to what they accused him of stealing their vote in recent by-elections, and that the government is in collusion with the electoral commission chairman to steal their votes.
Okay. Peter, let's take it one after the other. We are talking about abuse of constitution. Here is the situation. The president is very committed to respecting the rule of law, separation of powers, but more particularly respecting the judiciary in both spirit and intent. One of the placards read they should drop the charges against the APC MPs currently in court, right, for various electoral infractions. I understand the president respects the constitution, and you don't want to ask the executive to get into the judicial reign to give directives to the judiciary. And even if the president has such power, I'm sure he will not have a lot of appetite to use it. So this is the problem. We want to grow a country that respects men, that respects institutions, especially the independence of the judiciary. So the president will not be interfering into that.
So will the government engage the opposition APC members of parliament, or for that matter, the party itself, to address their possible concerns they might have?
Nobody believes in dialogue more than President Biu. Remember in 1996, at the peak of the civil war, the very debilitating civil war, when nobody knew where to start, he took over the reins of leadership. He went all out to ensure that they found out where Fode Sankoh was and started substantive exploratory talks that led to substantive dialogue that eventually ended the Sierra Leone Civil War. He has set up a national commission for national unity and cohesion. They will organize Bintu Mane 3. At this forum, all political parties, all civil society groups will meet to discuss issues bordering on cohesion, on national unity, and for the peace, stability, and development of our country generally. So President Biu has a lot of appetite to stitching this country together.
Mohamed Rahman Sware is the Sierra Leonean Information Minister. He spoke with me from the capital, Freetown. Representatives of the Sudanese Opposition Popular Congress Party, or PCP, met with the ruling military council to officially present its proposals for forming the transitional government. The military council had earlier rejected a civilian majority on a joint transitional team. Protesters criticized the ruling military council for rejecting a civilian majority power-sharing council. Meanwhile, local media reports say so far talks between the government and the opposition appear to have reached a stalemate. For more about the opposition party's meeting with the military council, I reached Dr. Bashir Adam Rahama, the Deputy General Secretary for the Opposition Popular Congress Party, or PCP.
The meeting of our General Secretary, Dr. Ali Al-Haj, with the chairman of the TMC was about our proposal for the interim period, that is the transitional period. We proposed for the transitional period that we should have three levels in the center, and then we will have the federal system in the states.
Were the parties' expectations met following the meeting with the Transitional Military Council?
The Transitional Military Council chairman, he was there just listening, but he said our proposals are well taken, and he will consult with the political committee of his council, and then he will let us know. We also propose that instead of meeting each party separately, the chairman of the TMC should call all the political parties for a meeting. We told him that you will find about 60 to 70% of the proposals submitted from the political parties, there is an anonymous agreement on them. So let us work on that, and then the other 40% to 30%, we will discuss it later. And he agreed to that. So we are now expecting that he will call all the political parties to come together for a meeting to discuss what the way forward for the Sudan through the transitional period.
Talk to me about the independent mediation committee that has been established negotiating between the Transitional Military Council and protesters demanding for a majority civilian administration to lead the transition.
As you know, there is a stalemate between the Transitional Military Council and the Freedom and Change Alliance. And there is a problem which is on the ground, that the revolutionary youth are now still in front of the doors of the headquarters of the army in Khartoum. And there is no way to disperse them by force. So there must be an agreement between these two parties, the TMC and the Freedom and Change Alliance, so that it is high time that the life in Khartoum should be normalized.
What are your expectations for this particular mediation, and what role will the PCP play in this?
Yeah, this mediation is taking the proposals of the Freedom and Change Alliance and sitting alone, and then also discussing with the TMC. But I would like to tell you that the TMC now, they have a kind of a veto power, because they are the strongest party now, because they, if it is not for the introduction of the will of the army, I don't think the revolutionaries could have attained the toppling of al-Bashir government.
So where do the people of Sudan go from here? Nobody seems to know what is happening. The Transitional Military Council has rejected the proposal that a majority of the transitional government should be from the civilian administration. Where do the people go from here?
So I think in the end, the wisdom of the people of Sudan, and by the work of the mediation committee now in force, I think we will attain a kind of an agreement, even if it will be temporarily for some time. But in the future, if some people would like to go alone and forget about the other political parties, or if some people would like to implement agenda which are alien to the Sudanese people, like, for instance, neglecting the role of religion in the society, and would like to have something which is alien to the tradition of the Sudanese people, who are now mostly Muslims, then you expect a lot of chaos in Sudan.
Dr. Bashir Adam Rahama is the Deputy General Secretary for the Sudanese Opposition Popular Congress Party, or PCP. He spoke with me from the capital, Khartoum.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, officials representing more than three dozen countries gathered for the second Belt and Road Summit in the Chinese capital, Beijing, last week. China's $1 trillion infrastructure project aims to link the country with other parts of Asia, Europe, and Africa. President Xi Jinping pledged to clean up his signature program following criticisms the policy is leading poor nations into debt, making them dependent on Beijing. For analysis about the summit, VOA French to Africa reporter Raissa Girondin spoke to Hannah Ryder, CEO of Development Reimagined, an international consultancy based in Beijing.
38 of the African countries are now officially members of the Belt and Road Initiative. Not all of them turned up in Beijing. There was actually only Egypt, Ethiopia and Kenya who came at head of state level for this summit, but the others were represented at ministerial level.
What exactly African countries want to get from that Belt and Road Initiative?
They want more manufacturing in order to create jobs. And China is the major source of manufacturing at the moment, so they're hoping that Chinese companies will start to move over to the continent. There's countries that want a lot of infrastructure to be built. There's an estimate from the African Development Bank that for African countries as a whole, they're going to need $63 billion per year of external financing to support them to build infrastructure. Can you imagine the scale of that? They also want access to China's market as well. China's consumption is growing really fast, so they're trying to get more of their goods into the Chinese market, again, to provide jobs to be able to scale up manufacturing on the continent too.
Critics of Belt and Road tend to target the flaws of the initiative, principally that it lacks transparency, promotes poor standards, and deals in debt-trap diplomacy. During the Chinese president's speech, we sense a change of tone, like if he was willing to admit mistakes. What do you think about that?
Well, remember that here at the Second Belt and Road Forum, President Xi isn't just speaking to an international constituency. He's also talking to a domestic constituency, some of whom have also been critical of the Belt and Road, the degree of how uncoordinated it might be and the confusion and messiness around it. So there are some domestic constituents who were kind of pushing for a bit of a pullback from Belt and Road Initiative here within China, as well as internationally. Now, you won't get Africans are saying that we want the Belt and Road Initiative to be pulled up because actually they want much more from the Belt and Road Initiative, as I've just explained. But yes, there was definitely an important signaling from President Xi that he's taking some of these concerns seriously, while at the same time not pulling back on the Belt and Road Initiative.
So what was the key point for you in this speech?
So what was really welcome from what he did say in terms of the future direction for the Belt and Road Initiative, and I think this is very important for African countries as well, is this push for high-quality infrastructure. Definitely very important for Africans. We don't want to be creating infrastructure which we have to be continuously improving and maintaining. It needs to be high quality from the outset. We need to have high standards. We also need green finance. African countries shouldn't have to be making the past mistakes of the rest of the world, having to deal with climate change straight away. He also talked about transparency, again, signaling there's going to be a bit more openness about what's happening with the Belt and Road Initiative. And we saw the government publishing a debt sustainability framework, so some guidance and some rules around how they look at debt of other countries when they are extending loans to them and so on, to try and appease the international community that this is something that China does care about. And there was also this a reference to access to China's markets, which was important.
According to you, is there any point missing in the Chinese president's speech? Something that could actually be a high interest for African countries?
But what we didn't really hear so much of was the importance of foreign direct investment, something which, for example, the Kenyan president, when he was here, he was really pushing on special economic zones in the continent and saying, look, we really want Chinese manufacturers to start to be coming into these zones where there's good infrastructure, where there's smooth business, logistics, low taxation. President Xi's speech didn't really point to much of that. And similarly, there's also been calls for China to open up some of the loans that it gives to be able to have more local companies or international companies being able to tender for them and so on. We also didn't hear a commitment on that. But let's see. We have to wait and see what will happen. As we have in China and always in international development, it's always about implementation, whether it's the US, whether it's China, whether it's in the UN. We have to push really hard to make sure that the right things happen.
Hannah Ryder is the CEO of Development Reimagined, an international consultancy based in Beijing. She spoke with VOA French to Africa reporter Raisa Girondin from Beijing. Kenyan officials and the media are raising concerns over the spread of fake news amid commemorations of World Press Freedom Day. The main theme this year is media for democracy in times of disinformation. For VOA, Ruben Chiama reports from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
Participants at a forum in the Kenyan capital lamented what they described as a rising tide of fake news dominating social media platforms, saying it poses a threat to democracy. David Omoyo is the chief executive officer of Media Council of Kenya, a statutory body that sets media standards and monitors compliance while listening to complaints from the public.
Social media is number one in propagating fake news. And if you combine social media and internet, because they are interlinked, if you combine them, you will notice that 45% fake news is perpetuated by social media. That is a crisis. The second largest purveyor of fake news and misinformation are community radios. How comes that now then radios, which are supposed to be more professional, with trained journalists, with a lot of investment and all that, are the second largest purveyors of misinformation and fake news?
According to a new survey, the public is more likely to interact with fake news while listening to radio than watching TV and reading a newspaper combined. He says social media and radio are the main platforms often being used to misreport issues. Caroline Ezek, an official from the German Development Cooperation Agency, GIZ, underscored the need to take stern measures to combat disinformation.
And with great concern, we witnessed an incredible amount of fake news and disinformation. This trend had a serious and very negative impact on all our efforts to work towards promoting peace in Kenya. Even though this is a day of media and a day to promote democracy, we want to use every possibility to advocate for peace.
In Kenya, a series of events was organized to complement the main celebration of the World Press Freedom Day, which took place in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, and is marked on May 3rd each year. The global celebration provides a platform for multiple actors to exchange on current issues, threats, and achievements concerning freedom of the press. According to Reporters Without Borders, Kenya has seen a slow erosion of media freedom in recent years. The political situation and security concerns have been used since 2016 as grounds for restricting the freedom to inform. Journalists have occasionally been subjected to physical attacks by the security forces, as well as to threats and intimidation by politicians. Andrew Miner is the regional director for Article 19 Eastern Africa.
So within Kenya, there is now what we call a Kenya Media Sector Working Group, which is dealing with a number of issues, but safety and protection of journalists is one of them, majorly to prevent those attacks, because we don't want them to happen and then we begin speaking around them. But the second part is to prosecute in the event that some have leaked through and happened.
Christopher Mutua is an official from the National Regulator Communications Authority of Kenya. He says the regulator has provided a level playing field for the industry.
We have done this by ensuring that we license as many broadcasters as much as the spectrum or frequencies can accommodate. To date, CA has licensed over 131 radio stations across the country, more than 80 TV stations. The reason why we do this is to ensure that we have diversity in the media, because we appreciate that without this diverse media, then our fledgling democracy will be at stake.
Among other key speakers at the forum were campaigners from civil society organizations, representatives of media organizations, academics, and officials of the judicial system. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
And right now it's time for music from our African collection. You are hearing Niwa Mitego with Wapo, followed by Edina featuring Sarah Cordier with Makoma, Eko Manny with A Dream, then follows Nina Rose with Anna Yimana, then Bobby Wine with Afande. Najiuliza binani kayona kesho chapo mwendo na ukilala hauna chako hivi uhuru wa kuongea kwenye nchi bado upo sije kuongea vitu kesho kajikuta sana viongozi wavuta bange wapo mana wana maamuzi ya kife wapo walio mmisija kaya wapo na waliochoka kusoma namba wapo kuna wasanii mateja wapo na waliopoteza malinda wapo kuna radio na TV naona vimeshapoteza CV Hakuna uhuru bari wala taarifa ya bari wanapindisha pindisha kuiokopa serikali. Sabini nchina ndesho kwa kiki. Siasa inafunika muziki. Viongozi wanashinda na kukiki. Wanagombea front page wauze kwenye gazeti. Nasikia kuna viongozi wamefoji vyeti. Wapo. Kuna mademu wanasagana. Wapo. Eti kuna vidume vinalelewa. Wapo. Sijasikia mnasema. Wapo. Kuna mastaa wanajiuza wapo wapenda bari za udaku kuliko kazi wapo eti kuna wasanii wanarogana wapo sijasikia mnasema kiongozi mwenye busara anapokea ushauri anapokea mawazo wa kimbere kiburi ayo samani mheshimiwa hivi unamjua Bashite hili ni jipu jipya toka Koromije limeshaiba na usaa limeshatunga na kukabidhi sindano ya kulidunga Daktari haugopi kubwa kidonda Wesi dokta wa majipu Kumbua kuna kufunga Kufami ofisi za watu hekume nayo ni kazi Hakuna noma wanangu tupige kazi Boda boda kazi Bajaji kazi Eti vipi kukaba nayo ni kazi Nasikia kuna viongozi umefoji vyeti Wapo Kuna mademu wanasagana Wapo Eti kuna vidume vinalelewa Wapo Sijasikia mnasema Wapo Efa ni wao piga manati Yopo Sita ya masai na mangati Faya Sarangono na super chef Kumzi mekata na shika shat Samini nchina ndesho kwa kiki Siasa inafunika muziki Viongozi wanashinda na kukiki Wanagombea front page wauze kwenye gazeti Kuna viongozi wavuta bange Wapo Mana wana maamuzi ya kife Wapo Walio mmisija kaya Wapo Na waliochoka kusoma namba Wapo Nasikia kuna viongozi wamefoji vyeti Wapo Kuna mademu wanasagana Wapo Eti kuna vidume vinalelewa Wapo Sijasikia mnasema Wapo
we mtu gani sasa Utaki kushauliwa, utaki kukosolewa Umelogwa we Unajiona ndugu yake na Yesu we We wanangu we Raundi mtanyoka kia Mungu Naona kichaka pewa lungu Are you awesome?
Hefa ni wao piga manati
Kenya kusa na kichaga Oya moshi stay up Bear city what up The two boys in a building Mama go mama me go
Yeah yeah
Adina
Yeah
not your friend. Unfuni ne dama koma so. Girl, I wanna love you to the end of time. May your body cross to secure my soul. Yeah, so don't be surprised if I kill myself all in the name of love. Me and I may be pair, will let me pay the price. So I dream you see me team while I'm filled with raw. Beauty lies in the eyes of beholder. Oh, home to girl, I'm sober. And kind of life, I don't be chasing my door and it's over. Since I'm my irresponsible, me bomb my soldier. Jaina woman, kind of winning, brand new baby soldier. Can be betrayed.
I'm not.
ebyo byetambula binonya masengere tolina wadondolo oli wabbe okutula ntalo wali mukasuka munye kuli waita bawala mafambale toli wa mafandali wafukorigino nazikunato
Quando va a cubire a girona e naura kuonemela kona yenga chichenyu afande sipigani nawe nakupigania sipigani nawe lakini nakupigania afande sirwana nawe be manirira kwe tirwana niwe mukagwana nirira iwe afande sipigani nawe nakupigania sipigani nawe lakini nakupigania afande sirwana nawe be.
And we ended with Bobby Wine with Afande. That was Music from the Continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sale, reporter Douglas Mpuga, producer Saida Hamdun, and our engineer for today, Cedric Franklin, we say big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, one day of rain far surpasses a whole year of drought. I'm your host, Peter Clotet in Washington. Good evening, Africa.